The Information's 411 is brought to you by Brex, the company that's reimagining financial systems to power the next generation of business. Check them out at brex.com/the information. In 2021, there was no bigger story in Silicon Valley than cryptocurrencies and other entities based on blockchain technology. For one reason or another, this was the year that almost every venture capitalist on Sand Hill Road dropped their guard and got on board the crypto gravy train. Welcome to the 411 podcast. My name is Amir Afradi, executive editor at The Information, and today we're talking about crypto startups in The Information 50, our annual list of the 50 most promising startups worth less than $1 billion and which you probably haven't heard of. Millions of people finally crossed the Rubicon into cryptocurrency land this year. But it's not just because trillions of dollars of value are now tied up in crypto tokens like Bitcoin. The potential of the industry, while still facing enormous questions and plenty of bubbles and scams that have yet to be uncovered, lies in a whole array of blockchain-based apps that have risen up. They include games like Virtually Human Studios' Zedrun, which generates tens of millions of dollars a year in revenue just from letting people breed digital horses, and which you won't find on the Apple App Store with its pesky 30% commission on digital transactions. Virtually Human Studio topped the media category of the Information 50 list this year, showing just how much overlap crypto is having with every industry out there. Games, of course, are where you'll find a lot of non-fungible tokens or NFTs that have made big waves this year. There's also DeFi or decentralized finance apps, which we'll get into shortly, and then a slew of apps that are trying to be the crypto version of Spotify or Twitter or Substack and many more. What does that mean? It means trying to give content creators more money and ownership from their contributions than the current crop of web apps give them. Crypto enthusiasts call this Web3, or the third wave of apps on the internet. First up, we're talking to Hannah Miller, author of The Information's Crypto Global newsletter, which I encourage you to subscribe to, about the 6 crypto startups that made our list. Then Hannah will speak to Ronil Rumberg, co-founder of Audius, which is trying to be the crypto version of Spotify. Stay tuned. Hannah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you're our resident crypto expert. It's been quite a year for the industry you cover. What was the biggest surprise from your perspective when it came to cryptocurrency startups this year?
I guess really just the amount of VC funding that's flowing into them. We've seen huge raises this year, and it's been a really exciting time to cover the industry. I think people are really starting to get how important crypto is and that it's really going to be here to stay in terms of how we view finance and money.
Well, what was the hump before? Why were there so many skeptics going into 2021?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complex thing to understand. You know, I think people are also, you know, worried about change and worried, you know, about things that they don't fully understand. And I think a lot of startups have done a really good job of, you know, being able to explain what they do, how they do it, and sort of capturing attention, both from the general public and VCs.
So Hannah, this year you have a good mix of companies here between the picks and shovels, the infrastructure that allows for applications to be built on top of blockchain technology, as well as the consumer-facing applications in areas like decentralized finance, or one of the companies you picked is a cryptocurrency developer. And then another one is an application that's kind of trying to dethrone a big, you know, consumer internet company that exists today, in this case, Spotify. So let's get into it. On the application side, the one that's trying to dethrone Spotify is Audius, and certainly stood out to me. What made that one interesting to you? Why did you pick it?
Yeah, well, in putting together the broader category, it was very important to me to find startups that touched, you know, major areas within crypto. So I had one developing cryptocurrency, one doing blockchain infrastructure, another doing DeFi, another doing crypto compliance, and then Audius, which really had its eyes on the prize with Web3. This is a company that is definitely looking for a consumer-friendly way to introduce Web3 technology. Audius is a really cool platform. It's really nice, you know, really nice interface, and it's easy to use. I think with a lot of, you know, especially these really intense DeFi platforms, they can be very daunting to people just getting into crypto. You know, they're not super easy to use. They are complex. They have to do with investing and numbers and math, but Audius is something everyone loves, music. And they also seized upon a problem within the music industry that's really common, where artists feel like they're not getting a big enough piece of the pie. They've already, you know, gotten interest from major names like Katy Perry, Jason Derulo, the Chainsmokers, as well as VCs. And they are challenging this idea that, you know, the music industry should take the biggest cut of what an artist produces. So I think what they're doing is just a cool thing. They're using blockchain technology to give artists a bigger piece of the pie. They get to decide their pricing. They get to decide, you know, how, you know, what they're making available to their users. And it's just a really cool direct way for them to connect with their fans.
And to kind of own crypto tokens in the process, yes, which is the ownership element. You mentioned the term Web3, which in some ways I like the term because it tries to reflect this idea, which is perfect in Audius's case, of the next generation of web companies that might or will try to replace the kind of existing more centralized model of a gatekeeper that is deciding who gets in and who owns what, like the Apples and Googles of the world. On the other hand, it's also a kind of just a rebrand of cryptocurrency, because we're essentially still talking about the same thing. We're talking about tokens that are traded that are based on blockchain and nothing more, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, people who hold the audio tokens actually get a piece of the network, which is really cool. And, you know, they have a real stake in it. And I think it's an idea of what Web3 could look like, you know, going down the line, that it's blockchain powered, that, you know, you're outside of the control of gatekeepers, like major tech companies who might be wanting to get your data and information. And it kind of goes back to basics with, you know, how the internet was before big tech companies coming in. And I think a lot of people are yearning for that version of the internet to return, but obviously on a better scale technologically.
And it's an interesting idea of how do you invest in these things and make money in these things. It's you know, in this case, you're not investing in the equity of the company itself. You're actually trying to acquire tokens that you hope over time, if there's a limited amount of them, will gain in value, right? So you're coming in as an investor and you're essentially buying tokens at a certain price. Well, Hanno, you're going to be talking to the CEO and co-founders of that company in a little bit. So why don't we move on to the rest of the list? I wanted to go next to Chia Network, which is branded as the climate-friendly alternative to Bitcoin. Why did you land on that one, and what kind of progress are you seeing with that cryptocurrency?
They tackle a really prevalent problem in crypto, which is this question of, is this environmentally friendly technology? There was a lot of criticism, particularly about Bitcoin mining over the summer, that it just sucks up a lot of electricity. People wonder, you know, what's the utility here? Why is this happening when, you know, we're in an era of climate change? So I found it really interesting that Chia sort of tackles this head on. They claim to be a more eco-friendly cryptocurrency. They use a different model versus proof of work, which is what Bitcoin uses to validate transactions. And they, I think, are addressing just a serious problem that will stand in crypto's way of becoming more widely adopted. So with Chia, they are doing some pretty cool stuff. They're actually partnering with a lot of different countries to work on providing uses for their blockchain. So for example, they teamed up recently with Costa Rica to create like a data storage blockchain-based system related to climate, you know, and tracking like energy transactions. So, you know, things like that, I think, show that people are starting to recognize the value of this cryptocurrency. And they're also interesting in the sense that not only are they developing a cryptocurrency, they're developing this sort of business model based on providing blockchain-based solutions to businesses and governments and other organizations.
Well, let's talk about some of the picks and shovels type companies that are on this list that I think are important. So the first of which is Quicknode, which, as I understand it, helps companies build apps that run on blockchain. And it's already kind of at a $10 million, more than $10 million revenue as a run rate, meaning it's on pace to generate that much annually. And you know, it has been around for at least a few years, but it does seem to have a lot of customers. Why did this one pique your interest?
Yeah, I think they do a good job of making something that's a bit complicated and unsexy appealing to clients, which is, you know, blockchain infrastructure. And they really just help make the process easy in terms of, you know, developing applications, running them. And that's an important thing because, you know, companies want to take the easy route in terms of tackling this new technology. So I was impressed with, you know, their fast growth and their really strong outlook for the future. And, you know, thought that they're entering a space that's very important within crypto.
It seemed like Quicknode also had these marquee customers who were essentially giving them a seal of approval, including Coinbase and PayPal and OpenSea. Is that another reason why you felt strongly about including them?
Oh, 100%. You know, these clients are some of the biggest names in crypto. I mean, OpenSea is just so dominant, you know, as an NFT marketplace. Obviously, Coinbase is the number one US-based crypto exchange. And it's amazing that they're already working with these big names. And it just, you know, shows that this is a company with value.
You talked earlier about the regulatory environment and some decisions still being up in the air. One of the companies you picked here was TRM Labs, which is all about helping companies with crypto compliance issues. Again, this company was also started, like Quicknode, it was started in 2017. So maybe it's taken a bit of time to get rolling. But what kind of action are you hearing with respect to TRM?
Yeah, they just raised $60 million from investors led by Tiger Global.
Since we published the list, right?
Yeah, no, this just happened this past week. And it just shows you that people are already looking ahead to the future when we do get more regulatory clarity. And companies that are already in crypto or want to get into crypto are going to need these partners to help them make sure that they're following regulations. Compliance-focused crypto startups, I think, are going to be some of the hottest things in 2022, just as we get more clarity on what the regulatory landscape is going to look like for crypto.
And we should talk about another kind of buzzword, DeFi or decentralized finance, and this company Zerion, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is 5 years old, doesn't have a lot of revenue. So tell us what it does and why it made the list.
Yeah, so obviously decentralized finance is pretty complex and it can be a bear to enter. But Zerion makes it really easy to start investing using DeFi platforms. It's a very easy to use application. And these guys know what they're talking about. You know, they've been enmeshed in blockchain for years. They met up at hackathons, and they want to build something that's easy for people to use. And I think they'll become more of a staple as more people get interested in DeFi and as the DeFi ecosystem continues to grow.
And what's the best, kind of most accessible example of DeFi in action?
Yeah, I think decentralized exchanges are a really important part of DeFi. These are exchanges that aren't run by a centralized entity the way, you know, Coinbase is. And people can trade cryptocurrencies pretty easily. And, you know, obviously there is sort of the specter of regulation in this area as well. Gary Gensler has, you know, pointed out that there are some centralized elements to DeFi. But right now, this might be more appealing to people as we await more regulatory clarity that's first going to address centralized exchanges.
And you know, I think music to a lot of people's ears is the implication in what you just said of a marketplace where you're not paying a 3% fee on every transaction like you do to Coinbase today.
Yeah, no, 100%. That people are looking, you know, for easier, cheaper options to trade cryptocurrencies, and, you know, DEXs are starting to really gain in popularity.
Well, I think the biggest breakout buzzword from the crypto world was NFTs this year. And you did include a company that helps other companies build marketplaces for selling non-fungible tokens. Why this one in particular, Mojito, which I think is based in New York?
Yeah, Mojito, it's...
Oh, no, it's Delaware. Sorry.
Yeah, it's confusing because their team is in New York. Yeah, and it was very important for me to have an NFT-focused startup in this list because obviously this is one of the hottest trends from 2021. Mojito has an incredible pedigree. Two of its co-founders come from Consensus, which is really the biggest developer of Ethereum-based products. So I knew they know.
And Ethereum is how value is transferred to obtain and sell NFTs in the first place, right?
Yeah. Ethereum is the most commonly used blockchain for NFTs right now, though we're seeing other blockchains like Solana rise up in terms of where NFTs are based. So when it comes to Mojito, I was just impressed with the founders, knew that they had a strong background, were passionate about blockchain. And it already had a big client under its belt with Sotheby's. So, you know, I feel like they're definitely someone to watch moving forward. And NFTs, that's going to be an area where all different types of businesses are going to want to get in on. You know, for example, a clothing company that wants to sell NFTs of the actual items that they sell in stores so that maybe your character in a metaverse or a virtual game can wear the same thing that you have. And they're going to need a partner to explain NFTs and the market to them. So, you know, the Mojito, I thought, kind of is a great bridge for that gap and can really, you know, it sounds also like they provide an amazing customer experience in terms of helping them build a marketplace that's, tailored to their needs and their company mission.
And not to go too broad with this, but obviously a lot of debates about NFTs and what is art? How should digital art be valued? But then also, are NFTs actually art, or are there going to be a lot of NFTs that have very real world, physical world tie-ins? So where do you end up in 2021 thinking about NFTs and the future of this category?
Yeah, I'm most excited for NFTs being used in games in the metaverse. I think that's where a huge part of their utility lies, whether it's outfitting your avatar with accessories or buying virtual land. You know, NFTs are going to be a huge part of that. I think there's always going to be art NFTs and digital collectibles that make you part of some exclusive club, you know, but I do think that there has to be an evolution in terms of their utility. And I believe that lies in gaming.
And just like with the other kind of DeFi theme we were talking about, one of the kind of potential areas that a startup like Mojito or others like it can exploit is that today we do have I don't want to say dominant NFT marketplace, but certainly a leading NFT marketplace, as you call it, that's taking a 2.5% transaction fee, which can really add up for some of these big NFT deals. So perhaps a way to disrupt that early leader and just take a sliver of what they were taking.
Yeah, I mean, OpenSea is obviously a really exciting company to watch. I do think they could be pursuing an IPO in the future. We've already seen them poach Lyft's CFO, Brian Roberts, who guided that company when they went public. So I wouldn't be shocked if OpenSea is pursuing something as well. And, you know, their success is just ridiculous in this space.
But maybe, again, ways to, let's say, democratize this type of marketplace for NFTs, so other companies can offer them maybe take a smaller transaction fee and be able to undercut this big dog, right?
That's true. Yeah. And also having just more specialized marketplaces that have your branding as a company. That's something OpenSea doesn't have.
Well, Hannah, thank you so much for walking us through the wild and crazy world of cryptocurrencies. Next up, we've got your interview with the founder, co-founder of Audius, Ronil Rumberg. So stick around for that. Today's episode is brought to you by Brex, the company that's reimagining financial systems to power the next generation of business. Brex knows that leaders and finance teams have heard it all. Disrupt the industry, banish mediocrity, dominate e-commerce. Well, Brex also knows that to do any of that, you first need a superior corporate card, one with 10 to 20 times higher credit limits, no personal guarantee, and built-in spend controls and expense tracking. Apply online at brex.com/theinformation, and you'll get up to 50,000 rewards points. That's brex.com/theinformation.
Hey, Ronil. Thanks so much for talking with me today. We're really glad to have you on the show. I'm excited to connect again.
Yeah, excited to be on. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. So I guess just getting right to it, tell me a little bit about Audius's founding story. You know, how did you guys get started?
Yeah, it's kind of a fun story because it played out over, you know, quite a few years prior to the actual founding of the project. But when we first kind of stumbled onto this problem, I would say was in 2015 or so. My co-founder Forrest and I are both big dance music fans, and we just saw a lot of our favorite creators feeling disenchanted with the prevailing streaming tools at the time. And specifically with respect to SoundCloud, a lot of them were choosing to leave. At that time, there was kind of this exodus of folks because they felt that SoundCloud wasn't really making choices that were aligned with the needs of the community, right? So the initial inkling of idea for Audius was basically seeing that and saying, hey, there must be a way for artists to actually like operate their own distribution tools, right? Like, why haven't artists been able to kind of vertically integrate in this area in the way that so many other kind of both forms of media, but also just, you know, creator businesses in general had already begun to shift, right? And as we kind of peeled back that onion, it's always more complicated than you realize. But, you know, we felt like there was something there to build this sort of like music distribution co-op kind of thing. That's how I describe the early idea. But in 2015, the tech to do what we wanted to didn't exist. So I was at the venture firm Kleiner Perkins at the time. My co-founder Forrest co-founded another company called Stacksware that he was working on at that time. And we were like, you know, there's not really possible to do this. So we just, you know, shelved the idea and moved on with our lives. And continued working at Kleiner for two more years after that, ended up leaving in late 2017 or so, and Forrest sold his company around 6 months prior to that as well. So we sort of came back together and we were like, oh, we should work on something together. It had been a while since, you know, he and I had worked on things, and we went to college together. That's how we know each other. But we had kind of worked on a lot of things in college and then gone our separate ways. So we were like, oh, I wonder if that, you know, streaming co-op thing could work today. And we built a little prototype and kind of convinced ourselves that it could. It was Ethereum and IPFS were kind of the two enabling technologies that let us build this when you know, without those, it wouldn't have been possible. So I'll stop there. But that kind of, you know, built the little prototype, and the rest kind of fell into place pretty quickly after that. That was early 2018.
And where does blockchain come into all of this? You know, why did you guys need blockchain technology to, you know, accomplish this vision?
Yeah, so Audius is fully decentralized. It's a digital streaming service that connects fans directly with artists and exclusive new music. And that direct piece, we really thought to truly do that, there needed to be no company there, right? It needed to be possible for artists kind of in this sort of self-sovereign way to be able to distribute to fans and to own those relationships that they build up with fans over time. So where blockchain fits into this is really as a layer for coordination within this network, I would describe it. So there are a lot of different participants in the Audius ecosystem. Some folks are contributing content like artists, there are fans listening. There are also node operators that basically host the content that artists are uploading, and then also host metadata and index that metadata. But there needed to be, you know, some kind of like effectively, you know, a coordination layer that behaved in a centralized fashion, right? There's one view of all the content that exists on Audius, all the accounts that exist on Audius, but no one owns or controls that shared view. And that was a really strong fit, we felt, with what, you know, Ethereum could do at the time. And then Solana has since started to replace a lot of what we had previously done with Ethereum and this sidechain POA network. But between the three of those, basically, we were able to coordinate the network across different types of questions, problems, et cetera, in a way that everyone can agree on what is the correct answer.
Can you guide me through an example of what one of those issues or problems might be?
Yeah, even as simple as like, who are all the nodes that are accessible in Audius, right? Like when an artist shows up to the network and says, I want to upload something, right? The question of like, who should they upload it to? How should they upload it? All of those things, you know, questions as basic as that, all the way up to as complicated as when users are doing social engagement on Audius, right? So when someone listens to something, when they repost something, when they make a playlist with some stuff, all of those actions are actually being conducted with the user's private key. So like anytime a user is taking one of those actions, they're signing a transaction and broadcasting it saying, hey, like I'm reposting this, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Same kind of thing there. The network is able to basically shift the problem of consensus onto the blockchain to say, hey, like if the blockchain says that someone did this at that time, then, you know, we treat it as gospel and follow it. Again, I guess without that, like kind of shared view of the world that everyone is able to modify according to, you know, the rules of the smart contracts, but that no one actually owns. We didn't think it was possible to build something like this, right? Or, well, it is possible. It just would have been very, very, very hard, right? Because you'd have to somehow find consensus across this network. And I mean, you end up with a structure that probably looks a bit like a blockchain, right? Because there's this question of forming consensus among untrusted decentralized parties is a really hard one.
Yeah, for sure. That's something I think the whole industry is grappling with. And when it comes to audio tokens, you know, what sort of privileges, I guess, does holding those tokens give to users?
Yeah, so there's a, I guess what our community calls a platform token that backs the Audius network. It's called the Audio token. So there are a little over a billion of them in existence right now. Folks are able to earn them by contributing content to the network or doing work for the network, right? So if you run a node, for example, you can earn some tokens back from the network in exchange for doing that. So the kind of core functions of that token are securing the network. So the folks who are doing that work and whatnot stake the token in order to be able to do work and earn revenue. But if they misbehave, they can lose that stake. It governs the network. So anyone who has those tokens is able to vote on different things that happen, right? Everything from, you know, should we add this new feature to, you know, should we change the structure of the token economics, for example, like the community controls all of those things. And the third piece is feature access. So artists are able to stake the token to get access to different features. So that's kind of the meat of your question here. There are a number of things right now that folks can get access to, including an NFT sort of gallery feature. So as an artist, you can actually show all the NFTs that either you've minted or that you own in your collection now, as a way to, you know, drive traffic towards them, that folks, you know, folks who might buy them or might get excited about them, things like that. So that's one feature. There are a number of like skinning features of Audius. So you can get like different color schemes and different things along those lines by holding some of the tokens. You also get access to the community of other token holders, right? So you're able to chat with them, connect with them, specifically the artists in that community. It's been really cool to see a lot of collabs come out of that and whatnot. And then the last function is you can, you know, stake as part of your staking that token, you're doing some work for the network as well. So those tokens generate some rewards back to the holder. So the token was really designed to be a means of aligning the economic incentives of all the participants in this network. And the cool thing about that is it's possible for anyone to show up here and earn tokens by doing work, right? So it's kind of, in that sense, it really is sort of like this scalable co-op kind of model, right? Where folks can earn into owning the network by working for it.
Yeah. And can you walk me through, I know it's still in development, but can you walk me through Audius's revenue model a little bit?
Yeah. So we're super excited about this. So to date, use of Audius has all been promotional, right? Folks are using the network to build a fan base and get their content out to folks and all of that. There's enough of an audience here on Audius now that, and especially among some of our earlier artists who've built up large followings, they're wanting to do things with that following, right? And from a technical perspective, of course, it's always been possible for folks to monetize their following if they want to, right? The data that they would need to target those users to, you know, you can pull all the wallet addresses of everyone who follows you and, you know, airdrop them assets, do things like that. But you know, things being technically possible is quite different from like, is it practically possible? And in 2022, I think, you know, our community's mandate is kind of to fulfill that latter part of using what's technically available to build out tools to make it accessible to artists, right? So we're excited about, you know, the exploration that we're going to see happen around that, right? Audius, the network, doesn't take a strong stance on how people should monetize their followings. It gives them tools to build that following and then a tool chain to, you know, use that following in any way they see fit. But some of the earlier experiments that I know will be going live, like, you know, probably sooner than others, are things like a fan club, for example. There are many artists that are wanting to offer like a paid subscription to access some exclusive portion of their catalog, the ability to join like a community around them and get to engage with them, and then potentially to get to layer some digital experiences on top of that, like being able to attend virtual shows with the artists, things like that. But you know, we've heard so many different wacky, cool ideas with what to do with these tools. I suspect that, you know, our predictions of how people will predominantly be monetizing with Audius are probably wrong today, right? It's such a kind of generic tool chain that that's even where we're seeing, you know, the community go build out a lot of these things, you know, just because they want to try them. There's one artist, for example, that wanted to be able to release like some very exclusive content. So like to sell a very, you know, limited edition set of NFTs, and then only the holders of that NFT get to listen to the track. But you can like trade the ability to listen to it, which is pretty neat. Ideas like that I love, right? Because Audius is the implementation tool chain for that. Like it's quite easy for an artist team to build out like the small bit that's necessary to do something like that on top of this tool chain. Because I guess in a very primitive sense, what Audius gives folks is the ability to programmatically permission access to content. So with that capability, you can set any rules around it you want, right? If I wanted to say, people have to pay $1,000 every time they listen to my track, I'm welcome to do that. But it's a free market, right? So like whether or not users actually choose to pay for that, I don't know. But I think, philosophically, we felt that it shouldn't be, the platform shouldn't be sort of making these one-size-fits-all choices for how artists should engage with their fans, monetize their fans, and build a, sustainable business and life around them. We're very, very excited for what's to come, as you can tell. But I think our community has its work cut out for it too. There's a lot of work ahead to help figure out the sort of templatized models of monetizing that artists will start to pattern after over time.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the artists have a lot of freedom, to decide how they're monetizing and also to decide how much, their streaming profits they're going to take. How does this differ from the music industry in general, especially with streaming platforms like Spotify, for example?
Yeah, I would preface this by saying I actually don't think Audius is competitive with like Spotify and Apple Music and tools like that. I think those tools do a great job of reaching like mass audience scale and helping artists build a very, very large fandom, right? If you're the really large artist that's signed to a major label and whatnot. But there are actually a lot of smaller artists that are signed to labels as well as this much longer tail of independent creators. But even for the bigger artists, I do think there are opportunities to monetize their most highly engaged super fans more effectively. So that's how I would compare Audius, I guess, to those networks. Audius's kind of mission is to help artists build and deepen relationships with those most highly engaged fans, and then monetize them accordingly, right? So being able to offer them things that the one-size-fits-all kind of streaming model isn't as much of a fit for, but that, we believe over time will start to be, substantial, like the kind of most substantial part of an artist's recurring revenue streams, right? We have artists with millions of monthly listeners on Spotify and on other platforms that make more from like 200 to 300 Patreon subscribers than they do from millions of listeners elsewhere, right? And I think that's kind of the fundamental disconnect in the industry right now, is that the ways that people are making money from their music and from their art are completely disconnected from like the way streaming works today. So, that's why I think we're so excited about the opportunities that this direct fan engagement can create for artists and for our community. But it's a very different kind of engagement model, and I think there's a reason why so far the strongest uptake of Audius has been in a few genres that are more grassroots driven, more community driven than others, like namely, dance music, hip hop, Latin music, and Spanish language music more broadly. Those communities have really gravitated to Audius. And I think it's because this is the way that, they are predominantly engaging with their fans, right? Is through these more grassroots channels and grassroots means, rather than not saying there's anything wrong with the other models of fan engagement either. It's just different, they shouldn't be one size fits all. I guess that's really what I'm trying to say here. And too much of the existing music industry is structured in that one size fits all way. It's kind of, you know, if you don't fit the mold of what you need to be to go down the traditional path, like there's not really any other choice. Either you're a artist operating at extreme scale or you don't have enough food to eat. There's no like in between.
Yeah. And what kind of growth have you seen in users and also artists who are joining the platform?
Yeah, we've been pretty blown away by this. So at this time last year, I think we had about 1 million monthly listeners on Audius, or a little less than that. And today, the network is about to cross 7 million monthly listeners. So the growth these past few years has been insane. The product launched publicly about 2 years ago. So it's still pretty young and pretty early, but there are 7 million people here every month, and around 200,000 artists have come on and engaged so far. So really, really excited about how kind of large this community has gotten, but it's also been really incredible to see how much responsibility the community has assumed through that, right? It wouldn't have been, or the core team that built the initial version of Audius today is around 25 people. There's no way that 25 people could service, you know, 7 million listeners without the community kind of, you know, controlling and owning like virtually everything, right? The community provides one another support. The community, like I said earlier, collaborate with one another and find all these cool ways to build out different like tools around Audius. For example, some folks built a podcast importing tool, so you can connect like an RSS feed of published podcast episodes to your Audius account and have them auto import over time. All these things that, you know, like our team now, you know, just plays a smaller and smaller role in the ecosystem, which is incredible, right? Like this is meant to be user owned and operated, and to see people taking charge of that and saying, wow, like I own this, so therefore like I want to make it better, has been really cool.
Yeah. And who are some of the artists on the platform? Anyone I might know?
Yeah. So I think, it, you know, probably folks that a lot of people listening would know, like Skrillex, Zedd, Deadmau5, Dylan Francis, a lot of folks in dance music, bass music that you would know, in hip hop as well. A lot of producers like Made in Tokyo have come on and built up big presences. Mike Shinoda as well. So you know, it's been really, really surreal to see all these folks kind of coming on, and I think what's resonating with them is this opportunity to control the relationship they have with fans and to do cool stuff with that, right? Even you know, Mike Shinoda, for example, has uploaded a number of these beats that he'll make live on Twitch with his fans, right? So he'll sit for 4 hours or 3 hours or what have you, make something cool with folks in the chat, like giving feedback, suggestions, etc. At the end of it, he uploaded, you know, the track and all the stems or the constituent bits of the track to Audius and opened it up for anyone to remix. So you know, his fans will actually come and make cool variations of it, and then it's just you know, there are these different forms of engagement that open up when you know, there's not a company that's deciding what features to build for engaging a fan base, right? And I think that's a really cool thing. But yeah, a lot of artists that you would know, and a whole lot that you might not yet, but that I would encourage you to you know, go discover. You know, there are 200,000 folks on there that are sharing cool stuff, and I'm sure there are things that anyone listening would be able to enjoy that they could find there.
Yeah, and just one last question. This just came out. You guys are building a radio station in DeFi land. Is that correct?
Yes. So we're good friends with the team over there. And one of the coolest aspects of Audius is that, you know, this is all open source, programmatically accessible. That means anyone can build their own client on top too, right? So DeFi Land was able to use the Audius API to pull content and, you know, curate like a cool radio station for folks to go listen to. They made some really cool graphics around it as well. So I'd encourage anyone to, you know, go check it out. It actually does look like a radio tower in the in their metaverse, which is awesome. So yeah, we're really excited about integrations like this because it gives artists the opportunity to get in front of more new, interesting fans that they otherwise might not have the opportunity to. And most artists want their content to be freely available, right? So in Audius, you can mark your content as available for folks to programmatically pull from it and use it. And that's what, you know, now DeFi Land is able to go search against and pull from. So, you know, super excited to see the other interesting use cases that people come up with for this catalog. There are a number of other games that have integrated it. There's things like that podcast importer tool I mentioned. I think now nearly 100 third-party applications have integrated this network in some shape or form. Yeah, definitely excited to see what folks start to curate into the DeFi Land station as well. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what folks are vibing with in that community.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I'm glad that we got to catch up and chat.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Information's 411. And thanks to Hannah Miller and Raneel Rumberg for talking to us. This episode was produced by Spoke Media. From Spoke, producer Cody Hoffmachl, coordinating producer Alicia Force, mixing and mastering engineer Will Short, associate producer Lucy Wong, and executive producer Keith Reynolds. From The Information, Anne Marinovich and Becky Aventash. I'm Amir Afradi. Have a great weekend, everyone.